We usually think of deception like passing a counterfeit $100 bill.
Right.
Like you hold it up to the light, you check for that little security thread, you look at the watermark, and if the physical object itself is fake, you just toss it in the trash.
Exactly. It's binary.
Right. It is either real currency or it is a lie. And your only job is just to evaluate that object in your hand. But when you step into the world of covert influence, that counterfeit bill analogy, well, it completely falls apart.
It really does. It's completely inadequate for what's actually happening out there.
Yeah, because we are looking at a landscape of deception today that is so much more sophisticated. And honestly, it's far more unsettling. We are moving way beyond that simple, kind of exhausted label of fake news to understand the systemic, industrialized manipulation of, well, who is actually speaking to you?
Which is so important because we are culturally conditioned to focus almost entirely on the information itself. I mean, we encounter a claim online or in print, and we immediately ask, are these facts true?
Right, that's the instinct.
But today, we are going to completely rewire that instinct for you.
Yes, we are. And our foundation for this deep dive is a really comprehensive August 2026 research report. It's titled Black Propaganda, A Systematic Guide, and it was authored jointly by the American newspaper and American TV.
It's a fantastic resource for
It
this.
really is. The goal is to understand exactly how trust and identity are weaponized. But before we get into the mechanics of how this all works, we need to establish a very clear baseline for you.
Definitely. This is a crucial disclaimer.
Yeah. So in this deep dive, we will be analyzing historical and modern political examples, and that includes specific allegations made by government agencies and tech platforms against foreign states, intelligence services, and political groups.
Right.
But we are not taking any political sides here. We are not endorsing the viewpoints of any groups mentioned, nor are we like adjudicating the guilt or innocence of any of these actors. We are strictly and impartially reporting the concepts, the historical documents, and the allegations exactly as they are laid out in the source text.
And that neutrality is absolutely vital. I mean, we are analyzing the engineering of these influence operations, the nuts and bolts of how they function, not the politics of the actors deploying them.
Okay, let's unpack this because we have to completely dismantle the idea that propaganda is just like a synonym for lies.
Right, it's not just lying.
Exactly. The massive paradigm shift here requires moving our attention from what is being said to who is saying it. So if ordinary misinformation is like passing that counterfeit bill, black propaganda is more like identity theft.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Think about it. A thief might steal your actual real credit card, right? And they might walk into a grocery store and buy actual real groceries.
The items are totally real.
Yeah, the transaction successfully processes, the bank approves it. But the fundamental deception, the actual crime, is about who is swiping the card.
What's fascinating here is how that distinction is formalized through a specific taxonomy of source attribution. The report looks at propaganda through three lenses, basically white, gray, and black.
Okay, break those down for us.
Well, it is crucial to internalize that these are not categories of truthfulness. They are entirely about the sender's transparency.
So nothing to do with facts.
Exactly. White propaganda means the real sponsor is fully disclosed. Like when the British government or the U.S. State Department issues a press release with their official seal on it, you know exactly who is speaking to you.
Got it. The source is right out in the open.
Right. Then gray propaganda is when the sponsor is deliberately ambiguous. The origin is hidden or maybe just left unstated, leaving the audience guessing.
But black propaganda, and this is the core of our deep dive, is defined by deliberate false attribution, right?
Yes, it is impersonation as a primary strategy. The message is meticulously designed to look like it comes from someone else entirely.
Like an enemy state or a dissident faction within your own country?
Exactly, or even an independent journalist or a local grassroots community group.
Wow.
The report visualizes this using a two-axis classification model, which is perhaps the most important conceptual hurdle to clear.
Walk us through that visual.
So on the y-axis, you have the falsity of the content, but on the x-axis, you have the falsification of the source. And the key here is that these operate completely independently of each other.
Wait, meaning a message can be 100% factually true, like perfectly accurate down to the smallest detail, but it is still classified as black propaganda if the source is impersonated?
You nailed it. Yes.
So, if an intelligence agency secretly writes a highly accurate analysis of a domestic political issue, but they publish it while posing as, I don't know, a concerned local citizen on a community message board.
That is black propaganda. The deception isn't the data. The deception is the disguise.
The disguise, right.
And conversely, a government can openly publish a total fabrication under their own official name. That is disinformation, but it's white propaganda because they aren't hiding who is handing you the document.
Okay, so the mechanism of borrowing someone else's credibility is really the defining feature here.
Absolutely. And understanding that allows us to look back at how intelligence operators engineered these campaigns before the internet even existed.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because I have to push back a little on the logic of the operators on the ground.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, if your ultimate goal is to deceive an enemy military or manipulate a foreign civilian population, why would an intelligence operator ever use true information? I mean, doesn't handing the enemy accurate, verifiable facts just help them?
It feels entirely counterintuitive, I know. But truth is actually the most potent weapon in establishing what operators call credibility borrowing.
Ability borrowing.
Right. You use a steady stream of truth to build the delivery mechanism for the lie. You have to earn the target's trust before you can exploit it.
Eh.
One of the masterclasses in this comes from World War II. It was run by the British Political Warfare Executive, or the PWE. They operated a radio station called Soldatensender Calais.
Targeting the German military, right.
Yes, specifically German forces stationed in Western Europe. Now, the station was engineered to sound indistinguishable from an authentic German military broadcast.
Wow.
But to pull off that illusion, the British operators didn't just get on the microphone and start broadcasting anti-Nazi lies.
Because they just turn it off.
Exactly. It would have been dismissed immediately. Instead, they played the most popular German music of the day. They provided highly accurate, up-to-the-minute sports scores.
Wait, really? Real sports scores?
Yes. They even broadcast incredibly timely, factually true military news. Sometimes they were reporting on German casualties or troop movements before the official Nazi channels even did.
Oh, wow. So they're essentially providing a superior news service to the enemy.
Precisely. They build absolute, unquestioning trust with the German soldiers who are sitting in the trenches listening to these broadcasts.
So they establish this persona of being like one of us, a loyal German station that just happens to be a little bit more honest than the high command.
Yes. And only once that profound trust was established did the PWE start slipping in the poison.
Ah, here we go.
They would weave in these subversive rumors designed to undermine confidence in the Nazi leadership. So they might report an accurate story about a bombing raid, but then casually mention a rumor that a local Nazi party official was hoarding luxury rations while the soldiers suffered.
Wow. So the truth was just the Trojan horse for the psychological sabotage.
Exactly.
They fed them the truth so they could feed them the lie. And that mechanism wasn't just limited to radio waves, right?
No, not at all.
Because the U.S. Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, they executed a similar strategy in the physical world with Operation Cornflake.
Oh, yeah. That is a fascinating example of exploiting an enemy's trusted domestic infrastructure.
So the OSS printed massive amounts of forged anti-Nazi propaganda and fake letters, but they knew if they just dropped them from airplanes, the German citizens would immediately recognize them as Allied psychological warfare.
Right, the packaging matters.
Exactly. So they packaged these forged letters to look exactly like ordinary domestic German mail. They counterfeited the stamps. They matched the postal typography. They even used real addresses of actual German citizens.
Such attention to detail.
Yeah. And then they loaded these forged mail bags onto Allied planes. And when bombers targeted German postal train routes, they would literally drop these fake mail bags right into the wreckage.
The brilliance of that operation was relying on the German postal workers to finish the job for them.
Right.
The real postal workers would arrive to clean up the bombed train. They'd find these stray mail bags in the debris and just assume they were legitimate mail that had been scattered.
So they just unwittingly deliver Allied propaganda right to the doorsteps of German citizens.
Yes. The citizen opens their mail, sees a properly stamped letter from what looks like a fellow German, and the credibility is successfully borrowed.
That is wild. You are basically hacking the trusted postal system to act as a disguised distributor.
Mm.
And that underlying goal, you know, penetrating a local identity to make external influence look organic, it just kept evolving. Like, by the time we get to the Vietnam War, U.S. and South Vietnamese forces take it a step further with the Sacred Sword of the Patriots League.
Right. That operation moved from forging mail to forging an entire organization.
How so?
The CIA and military operators created a completely fictitious notional resistance movement that was supposedly operating inside North Vietnam. I mean, it just didn't exist.
Wow.
But they gave it a name, they gave it a clandestine radio station, they printed leaflets and built this whole organizational mythology.
So what was the point of faking a whole group?
The objective was identity penetration, making external U.S. and South Vietnamese psychological warfare look like a genuine organic internal uprising by disgruntled North Vietnamese citizens.
Oh, I see. They are manufacturing a fake grassroots movement to make it look like the calls coming from inside the house.
Exactly. Yeah. The target population is just far more likely to listen to a fellow citizen rebelling against the government than they are to a foreign military dropping leaflets.
Right. And if we look at the underlying mechanic of Operation Cornflakes, or the Sacred Sword basically hijacking trusted domestic infrastructure and fabricating grassroots identities, we see the exact same blueprint being applied today.
Oh, absolutely.
The only difference is we have moved from dropping forged mailbags out of planes to dropping digital personas directly into social media feeds. The underlying goal of identity penetration is identical, but the economics have totally changed.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the modern digital architecture has completely collapsed the cost of manufacturing an identity.
Yeah, drastically.
Right, because in 1944, creating a fake radio station or a fake postal run, that took immense physical infrastructure, aircraft, intelligence networks. But today, you don't need a radio tower. You just need a Wi-Fi connection and a basic understanding of platform algorithms.
It really seems like generative AI has handed these covert operators an infinite printing press. I mean, they can create a million fake personas, write in 100 languages flawlessly, generate synthetic profile pictures in seconds, and just flood a network.
They can. But the research points out a crucial bottleneck here.
Which is?
Having a million newspapers doesn't matter if you don't have the delivery trucks to get them to the front doors. In the digital age, that delivery truck is human trust.
Human trust.
That is the ultimate limiting factor. Digital platforms make it incredibly cheap to manufacture identity and volume, sure, but they do not make it easy to manufacture authentic human engagement.
Right. And to understand how operators try to bridge that gap, we can look at some of the major modern allegations outlined in the research. And again, just anchoring back to our neutrality framework for you listening, we are strictly examining the mechanics alleged by the U.S. Department of Justice and major tech platform threat intelligence teams.
Exactly. Just looking at the mechanics.
So let's look at the Internet Research Agency, the IRA, which the DOJ indicted back in 2018. They didn't just set up accounts blasting Russian state talking points. They engaged in deep identity penetration.
Right. They really embedded themselves.
Yeah. They created fake American personas, constructed fake grassroots activist groups across the whole political spectrum, and they infiltrated local social media communities.
They use highly localized American-style language to engage in astroturfing,
which is basically manufacturing the appearance of spontaneous domestic public opinion, right?
Yes. They were trying to build the modern equivalent of the Sacred Sword of the Patriots League, but doing it in Facebook groups.
Or consider the more recent Russian doppelganger network, which was disrupted by the DOJ. That campaign focused heavily on cloning trusted institutions.
Right, using a tactic called cyber squatting.
Walk us through cyber squatting.
So they would purchase domain names that looked almost identical to legitimate, highly trusted Western news brands. Maybe swapping a .com for a .co or using a slightly altered spelling.
Just a tiny typo, basically.
Exactly. And then they replicated the exact visual layout, the fonts, the bylines of these real newspapers, and then pumped out narratives designed to weaken Western support for Ukraine.
It is literally the industrialized digital version of Operation Cornflakes.
It really is.
You aren't just faking the message. You are carefully cloning the trusted delivery vehicle. You want the user to glance at the URL, see a familiar newspaper logo, and just lower their psychological defenses.
Yes. But the research provides a massive reality check about the role of AI in all of this. Because we tend to assume that AI makes these disinformation campaigns this unstoppable, omnipotent force.
Yeah, like an instant win button.
But look at the Dragon Bridge Network, also known as Spamouflage. Platform researchers like Google and OpenAI have linked it to the PRC. They used AI to generate massive volumes of cross-platform posts, fake images, automatically translated text. I mean, it was an absolute fire hose of synthetic content.
A fire hose. And what was the result?
Well, the threat intelligence reports found that despite all that massive volume and AI generation, the Dragon Bridge network achieved extremely low authentic engagement.
Really?
Yeah, real everyday human beings just weren't interacting with it. The AI could perfectly translate a political narrative into English, but it couldn't replicate the nuanced, authentic community interactions that actually build trust.
So scale does not equal influence. Just because a script can spin up 10,000 bots to tweet a narrative doesn't mean a single real human is going to read them, trust them, or be influenced by them.
Exactly. The delivery truck of human trust is missing.
Which brings up a really critical question, I think. If throwing massive AI volume at a platform isn't the magic bullet, what actually makes a human being fall for black propaganda? Like, once a fabricated narrative is introduced, how does it shed its sketchy origins? Is there a way operators kind of money launder information to make it look clean by the time it reaches a real user?
That's a great analogy, and the intelligence community actually uses that exact terminology. They call it source laundering.
Source laundering, okay.
The objective is to systematically obscure the real origin of a piece of information as it passes through a chain of intermediaries. And the classic historical blueprint for this is the Soviet bloc's Operation Denver in the 1980s.
This is the campaign regarding the origins of HIV and AIDS, right?
Correct. The KGB and Allied intelligence services wanted to push this fabricated claim that the HIV virus was a biological weapon engineered by the U.S. military at Fort Detrick.
Okay.
But they knew if they just printed that accusation in the official Soviet state newspaper Pravda, the global public would immediately dismiss it as obvious Cold War disinformation.
Right. Nobody would buy it from them directly.
So they had to launder the source. They planted an anonymous letter containing the claims in an obscure English-language newspaper in India called The Patriot.
Ah, so they drop it in a totally separate geographic and political environment.
Exactly. Then Soviet media picked up the story, but they didn't claim it as their own. They simply reported that an Indian newspaper is investigating claims.
Wow, that's clever.
And eventually, the narrative got repeated by third-party intermediaries, wire services, and other international outlets. By the time it reached a reader in Western Europe or the U.S., it was being cited as independent reporting or international scientific speculation.
So the source was successfully laundered. The dirt of that KGB origin story was completely washed off.
Yes.
By the time an everyday person reads it, they think they're reading an independent medical debate. They are completely unaware of the chain of custody that leads back to an intelligence office.
Exactly right.
But beyond the mechanics of laundering the information, we really have to look at the psychology of the target. I mean, why would a person see something laundered through a social media feed today and just blindly accept it?
Because black propaganda is precision engineered to exploit our ancient psychological wiring. We are all overwhelmed with information, so our brains rely on cognitive shortcuts to process the world.
What kind of shortcuts?
Well, one of the most exploitable is the illusory truth effect. This is a psychological phenomenon where repetition literally makes a claim feel more true.
Just by seeing it again and again.
Yes. If you see a specific headline or claim repeated 10 times across different platforms by different accounts, even if you know the accounts are unverified, your brain flags the information as familiar. And human psychology naturally equates familiarity with plausibility.
Yeah, that makes sense. We also suffer heavily from authority bias, right?
Oh, absolutely.
If an account has an official-looking logo or the profile bio claims they are a PhD or a whistleblowing insider, we instinctively just let our guard down. We don't take the time to independently verify their credentials before we consume the information.
You just don't have the time.
Yeah.
But the most dangerous psychological hook the research highlights is the weaponization of high arousal moral emotions. Think anger, fear, betrayal, disgust.
Yeah.
Operators aim for moral shock.
And that moral shock acts as a cognitive bypass valve. Like when a piece of black propaganda triggers intense outrage, maybe framing a political opponent as a threat to children or claiming a profound injustice is happening in your town, it just bypasses the analytical, critical thinking part of your brain entirely.
It shuts down the logic center.
You just hit the share button because you feel a biological imperative to warn your tribe. The sharing happens long before the slow process of factual verification can ever catch up.
And that emotional contagion is what propagates the narrative through organic networks. The covert operators don't need to invent new grievances or convince people of entirely new ideologies.
They just use what's there.
Exactly. They simply map the existing fault lines in a target society.
Yeah.
You know, political polarization, economic anxiety, intergroup distrust, and they pour gasoline on those fires using disguised sources that the target demographic is primed to trust.
Well, if this is literally a systemic weapon, if it's a sophisticated toolkit engineered to erode electoral legitimacy, trigger moral panics, and exploit our psychological vulnerabilities, why isn't there just a federal law making black propaganda a crime? I mean, if malicious actors are running these operations inside our borders, why does the legal framework seemingly just allow it to happen?
This raises an important question, and it sits right at the heart of what legal scholars call the democratic dilemma. A free society has to balance protecting itself from systemic deception against protecting the core values of the society itself. In the United States, that tension is governed by the First Amendment.
So the government cannot simply outlaw lying.
The Supreme Court case United States v. Alvarez illustrates this perfectly. Xavier Alvarez falsely claimed he had been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Okay.
He was prosecuted under the Stolen Valor Act, which made it a crime to lie about receiving military decorations. But the Supreme Court struck the law down.
Wait, really?
Yes. They made it exceptionally clear that false speech on its own is generally protected by the Constitution. There is no broad sweeping exception to the First Amendment simply because a statement is a lie. The government can only criminalize false speech if it falls into very specific, historically unprotected categories like fraud, defamation, or perjury.
So merely fabricating a political narrative or setting up a fake activist account to spread lies about a social issue isn't inherently a federal crime.
No, it is not. And the democratic reasoning behind that is profound. If you give the federal government the statutory power to ban propaganda or criminalize lies, you are essentially giving whoever happens to be currently in power the legal authority to define what the truth is.
I see.
Historically, that power becomes a highly dangerous tool used to suppress lawful dissent, silence investigative journalism, or outlaw unpopular views by simply labeling them false. The cure of censorship is viewed as vastly more dangerous to a democracy than the disease of propaganda.
So how does a democracy actually fight back against black propaganda if it can't censor it? Because the research highlights a different legal mechanism, right? A FARO, the Foreign Agents Registration Act.
Yes, FARO is the perfect example of the democratic legal approach. It is explicitly not a censorship law. It is a transparency law.
How does it work?
FARAN does not dictate what a foreign agent can or cannot say to the American public. It simply mandates that they must register their activities and they must place a conspicuous label on their informational materials disclosing who is actually paying for the message.
So it attacks the core deception of black propaganda by demanding provenance. It forces the black or gray propaganda to become white propaganda.
Exactly.
And what's fascinating is that this playbook isn't confined to geopolitics or elections either. The exact same black propaganda tactics are deployed in global financial markets. Corporate operators use identity penetration to execute reputation attacks against competitors.
Oh, the strategic parallels are striking. Instead of an intelligence agency impersonating a grassroots political activist to swing a vote, a corporate operator might impersonate a competitor's dissatisfied customer.
Or fabricate a fake whistleblower inside a company.
Right, or set up a disguised independent stock analyst blog.
Yeah, they run these short and distort schemes. A malicious actor takes a short position on a target company's stock, meaning they actually make money if the stock price drops.
Right.
Then they use disguised sources to flood the market with false rumors. You know, maybe circulating a forged FDA rejection letter for a pharmaceutical company or spreading fake news about a catastrophic product failure. The goal is to induce a panic sell-off and crash the market price.
It is the exact same mechanism of identity manipulation, just targeting the psychology of shareholders instead of the psychology of voters.
Exactly.
Although in the corporate and financial context, the legal boundaries are quite different. That conduct frequently crosses the line into securities fraud and market manipulation because the deceptive speech is explicitly integrated into a financial scheme to defraud investors out of money.
Right.
But the tactical mechanism, you know, hiding the real sponsor to borrow credibility and trigger a panic, is identical to a political operation.
So what does this all mean for you navigating this environment every single day? The ultimate takeaway from synthesizing all this research is that your best defense mechanism isn't ideological. It's not about exhaustively arguing the granular facts of every single provocative claim you encounter online.
No, it's not.
It is about fundamentally adopting a provenance-first checklist.
We have to change our primary defensive reflex. I mean, when you encounter a highly emotional, provocative, or shocking claim online, your natural instinct is usually to immediately ask, is this true?
Right. But the research suggests we need to stop asking that first. The very first question you must train yourself to ask is, who is the original source?
Yes.
Not the person who retweeted it, not the influencer who shared it in your feed, not the aggregator. Who is the absolute origin of the information? Can you independently verify their identity? And can you verify their specific access to the information they are claiming to have?
You have to mentally reconstruct that chain of custody. If you cannot verify the true origin of the source, engaging in a debate about the factual content is often just stepping into a trap designed by an operator.
You have to check the ID before you process the transaction. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with a thought that really lingered with me after digesting these historical playbooks and platform reports.
It's a sobering thought.
It really is. We've spent this entire deep dive analyzing how nation states, intelligence agencies, and massive corporations use these sophisticated tools against entire populations, electorates, and global markets.
Right.
But as generative AI gets cheaper, faster, and infinitely more personalized, what happens when the black propaganda playbook scales down?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Imagine a near future where these exact same tactics, the meticulous source laundering, the cloned digital identities, the hyper-targeted psychological profiling, are deployed not to swing a national election, but by a malicious actor to destroy your personal reputation.
That's terrifying.
Imagine it deployed within your specific social circle, your family, or your workplace. If an automated system can perfectly impersonate your boss via synthesized voice or clone your best friend's messaging style to feed you customized disinformation or feed them fabricated evidence about you, how will you ever know who you are actually talking to?
When the technological cost of perfect impersonation drops to absolute zero, verifiable trust becomes the rarest and most valuable currency on Earth.
Make sure you know who's swiping your card. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay skeptical, and we'll see you next time.